In the office this week, Alice and I had a creative discussion. And it was over an apostrophe. Let me ask you, when it comes to Mother's Day, where does the apostrophe go? Does the apostrophe go before the S? That is a singular, you know, and possessive. Is it a day that belongs to a particular mother, or all? Is it one that belongs to all mothers together? Is the apostrophe something that should go after the S? Or is Mother's Day, should it be spelled out without an apostrophe? I mean, after all, today is really the Lord's Day. By saying this, am I committing sacrilege on Mother's Day? Just a thought. Keep that in the back of your head as we continue. We heard in that video a lot of mom commandments, right? Things that are spoken, in love. A very key line to recall in that whole video was the line which said, "And remember, I love you." In this letter of John, like all the other letters that are coming from a similar group of scriptures, which include the Gospel of John and these three letters of John, not the same person, as well as the book of Revelation, which was written by a bishop, an overseer. We hear common themes throughout it all. Central in all of these is love. That those who love God need to love one another. Of course, we need to get real about this concept of love. Because just like the love of a mother, the love of God and the love we have for each other needs to hit the road of daily experience. It needs to be deep and wide. It needs to encompass all of our daily work and walk. To abide in this love is no easy thing. To abide. I love that word, but it's hard to get a grasp of. Because it is almost an alien word for us. We know that an abode is a place where people live. So living and not just speaking. Today there will be a lot of words said, a lot of words written upon cards. Now, mothers, tell me, is Mother's Day solely about thanking you for all that you have done throughout the years? Or is it something more? What is it you desire of your children? Do you desire of your children that they will be grateful to you? Well, yes. Or do you desire for them that they will have a good life? That they will be, to use an overused word, successful? That they will be happy? That they will pass on what was passed on to you previously? Think about your longing, those of you who are mothers, and what you long for your children. Do you not think that God has similar longings for those who are called God's children? God longs for love. In fact, every commandment in the Bible is grounded in love. If we do not hear the commandments of love through the ear of love, if we do not read through the lens of love, we are misreading, we are mishearing the commandments of God. They can be harsh at times, but they are given out of love. Love undergirds everything. A real kind of love, not something that is partial, not something that is fleeting, not something that is only romantic, but love that is real. Speaking of reality, in these particular verses that we have just heard, we have an indication of some of the struggles that the early church was facing, particularly those churches that were addressed by this letter. I mean, we're sometimes tempted to think that Scripture is intended only for us, that it was written for us today and for nobody else. That's one of my struggles with the people's interpretation of the book of Revelation. That sometimes we believe that it's only us who can understand what it means who live in these quote-unquote latter days, misunderstanding that in the very beginning, those days were called the latter days as well. And there were struggles faced by the early church that we have inklings of. And here we are facing into one of the struggles of the early church, and its understanding of who Jesus was and is. How this was answered took many years, and we see one of the scriptures that deals with it in a later creed that the church struggled with. It boiled down to just a placement of letters in a certain word to indicate that Jesus was fully God and fully a human being. Now, there were those in that day and age that were tempted to believe that Jesus, it only seemed like Jesus was in human form. But that really he was from God, and that this whole thing was a matter of spirit and not really of deep down real humanity. In fact, the term for seem is what we use in talking about those who were kind of lifting this up as sort of a spiritual heresy, in fact, that was called by the church, called docetism. Believing that it only seemed like Jesus was a human being. And these particular verses are actually saying that believing that Jesus was the Son of God through water and through blood. Were you listening to those terms? Through water and through blood. Let me read that verse specifically. This is the one who came by water and blood, Jesus Christ. Not with water only, but by the water and the blood. It's repeated, so it must be important. That's been understood in various ways over the years. Some look at the water and they're thinking about Jesus' baptism. And they're thinking about the blood being the blood that was shed upon the cross. And that's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is linking back to the Gospel of John's picture of Jesus upon the cross. And there, you know, he's stretched out, and towards the very end, there was a soldier who came up and with a spear pierced his side, and out came what? What? Blood and water. In other words, it's a very concrete, real way of saying that this wasn't something just spiritual, that Jesus was a human being. And if you link back to that verse in John's Gospel, it says this. It said, one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and at once blood and water came out. And then it says, in parentheses, as if to kind of add a little commentary, it says, he who saw this has testified so that you may believe. His testimony is true, and he knows that he tells the truth. Now, why would it matter whether Jesus was actually a human being? Why would it matter? Well, why does it matter that any of us have a mother? Does it matter that we had a mother who was there with us? A mother, either somebody who was our biological mother or somebody who was acting for us like a mother, to, through their words and through their actions, guide us and shape us in very physical ways? Did that matter for you? Yes. The person that you have become is in great measure due to the actual physical presence of this woman in your life. Is it not? Jesus did not just come in as some kind of spiritual form and dwell, and he was not just some kind of, and Christians down through the years have struggled with this a little bit, because we have a tendency to think of Jesus as kind of a Superman. A Superman who came from heaven when was not really here on earth. A Superman who came from some distant place like Krypton. No, it wasn't Krypton. Heaven. And kind of zoomed in, you know, faster than a speeding bullet. And righted all the wrongs whenever they happened. No. Scripture is very clear. Jesus was real. He lived. He suffered. He died. He was sad. He was joyful. He lived as a human being, fully. And because he lived as a human being, this redeems a bit of that human nature that we are all a part of. In fact, it's the Apostle Paul that talks about Jesus as being the second human, or, if you will, the second Adam. There was the first Adam, and if you turn to the book of Genesis, there is a description of the first human being, and when it's first mentioned, Adam represents all of humanity. He's a human being. It's only later on that there is a separation between Adam and Eve. But at the beginning, there is just one. Jesus is the second Adam, the second human being that makes possible the redemption, the reconciliation, the transformation, the new heaven, the new earth, the new man, the new woman, the new possibility of God. Made real in love. Get real. If Jesus was real, our love for one another needs to be real. I mean, not just thinking about love and having nice loving thoughts for one another. I love you, Mom. But actually doing the hard work of love. Love is perhaps the hardest thing we will ever, ever do. It is an impossible possibility. Now, when it says about loving our brothers and sisters, you know, that encompasses everything. Because if Jesus came and died for all of humanity, then therefore all of humanity is included in that phrase, children of God. Even those among us or beyond us whom we consider our enemies, the stranger, as well as the neighbor. Well, one of the strangest things about love is that it is often the hardest when it comes closest to home. I don't know about you, but in families, and I've seen this many times, some of the most vicious fights happen in the family. In fact, what policemen will tell you, that one of the calls that they are, is their least favorite, are what? The domestic calls. The persons closest to you are sometimes the hardest ones to love. And sometimes it involves pain, it involves hurt, it involves working through things. But Jesus made it worth it. He made it possible when we abide in His love. Okay, let me return to that initial question. Where do you fall when it comes to that apostrophe? Does it come before the S? You can see where we came out. Allison sort of decided that. And I bowed to her wisdom. Does it come before the S? Does it come after the S? Is there an apostrophe in there at all? To be honest, I really don't know. But I do know this. Love God. And love your brothers and sisters. That covers great territory, doesn't it? So let's get real about it, okay?